Jimmy Horn, speaking on Jim Crow. Just after Vietnam got important, in 1967, my youngest brother's best friend, he was a veteran and also an SO gas pump jockey, was fished out of the Cumberland River with his testicles in the pockets of his blue jeans. You see, he'd been gossip associated with a white woman. More than that, he'd been loving her regularly. So now, we come to the middle 1970s, and now, barring some unforeseen and unlikely event, the pundits say I could become one of Tennessee's senators, just like it was Massachusetts down here. Well, I don't know about that. I don't know if anything has changed quite like that. Jim Crow may be gone, technically, but he's not forgotten. On Beulah Land. Believe it or not, I have always embraced the Southern values of honor, hospitality, and graciousness. I like the way things are up front down here, much better than I liked it up north. A sheriff in Jackson City says, the only thing I like better than arresting niggers is catching a big 7-pound bass. I like that. I like knowing who is they and who is we. On James Earl Ray. The damnedest pity I know of. The entire Memphis court proceedings, following one of the most spectacular and heinous crimes of the century, King's murder in cold blood, took 144 minutes. After a little more than 3 hours, during which no formal legal procedures took place, it was over. There was no cross-examination of James Earl Ray, Galt, St. Vincent Galt, Bridgman, Sneed, or anyone else for that matter. It was history as the mosquito bite, the blink of an eye. Then 3 years ago, after throwing my weight around in some ways I don't care to remember, I got to visit Ray at Brusky State Prison. Ray was wearing a blue jean jacket and work shirt, and he was dusting leaves along a sidewalk. He seemed to me to have the natural look of a groundskeeper. We sat down on a front yard bench, and for some unknown reason he offered me a cigarette. "You want to know how I did it, too?" he said. "No," I told him. "I'd like to know who did it." Ray smiled and lighted a second cigarette for himself, one already being in his mouth. He puffed on two cigarettes for the next 5 minutes or so, staring straight at the ground. He said absolutely not one more word. I think he was playing with me. For the first time, and I don't know exactly why, I believed that he'd actually done it. I believed that he'd done it for his own personal satisfaction, and I felt he was proud of what he'd done. Then recently they moved him to Nashville, of all places. He's appealing again. Now nobody believes he did it again. On a magazine article claiming he'd read Amy Vanderbilt to his wife. This is true. Last night, in fact, Maureen and I discussed a lesson in etiquette for upwardly mobile black people. In the lesson, two up-and-coming black painters, both foremen, are working on a tall building and one of them falls. "Hey now, don't fall," his friend says. "I can't help it, I already fell," the falling man answers. "Well, you gon' fall right on a white lady down there," the friend comes right back, and that falling man stops falling and returns to the roof. That is etiquette for black people, just as I read it in Miss Vanderbilt's fine book. On being shot. I read that Dr. King thought about it a lot. For him, it seemed to be a means of guaranteeing his legacy. I doubt he looked forward to it, though, as some have written. I saw James Meredith get shot in person, 1966, in Hernando, Mississippi. He was shot in the stomach. He had on a striped short-sleeved shirt, and it literally turned red down the front. Meredith crawled to the side of the road on his hands and knees before anyone could help him. It wasn't inspiring for me to watch. I'm more fatalistic about it now, though. I try to deal with it openly, even within my family. I can joke about it going into some big rally outside of Nashville or out of state. In Nashville itself, I feel pretty safe. On fear. Fear is the one thing that has kept the black man down so long in the South. My grandmother used to tell us a story, as she was a strict, card-carrying Baptist lady who didn't exaggerate, much less lie. She said that in plantation days, the people were so terrified of whites that they put their heads in cooking pots or the wood stove before they would dare to pray out loud. I remember, too, there was always this phrase around when I was growing up. What if the white people find out? And that's why, above all, a black leader cannot show fear. Of course, I'm a lot braver with my 37-year-old body than I was with the one I had when I was 25 or so. You know me, Oakes. But I didn't really know him. Not really.